share this episode with a friend and dialogue, or join us online at www.radioproject.org for further comment. You can also subscribe to our podcast or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. The Making Contact team is Lisa Rudman, Monica Lopez, Salima Hamarani, Anita Johnson, Sabine Blazin, and Viratai Kolsker. I'm Anita Johnson. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
It's just about 11:30 here at KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Voices for the Animals, interviewing activist Michelle Seidelman about her work with the international organization Sea Shepherd. First, let's listen to a couple of announcements. Thanks for tuning in today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the August Amazee After Dark, featuring Insexuality, Ultrasonic Love Songs, and Death Dances from the Panamanian Rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at Amazee in Portland. What does the world sound like to an insect or a bat? You can find out by exploring the insect music you've never heard before in surround sound under the Panamanian stars. Again, that's Amazee After Dark, featuring Insexuality, Ultrasonic Love Songs, and Death Dances from the Panamanian Rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of EFFECT on Thursday and Friday, September 6th and 7th at the University of Oregon White Stag Block in Portland. EFFECT is a two-day conference that examines the work, culture, and design of social change. This grassroots event featuring stories from multiple marginalized activists, creators, and technologists working towards social change. Again, that's AFFECT on Thursday and Friday, September 6th and 7th at the University of Oregon, White Stag Block, 70 Northwest Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland with your host, Courtney Scott. The ocean's largest sea mammals, the orcas, are under fire from human exploitation and environmental degradation. They are hunted and killed by whalers, they are suffocating from pollution, and here in the Northwest, they are slowly starving from lack of enough salmon to feed them. But they have an ardent supporter and activist on their side, right here in Portland. Today, we are pleased to welcome Michelle Seidelman, who, with her husband Miguel, started Portland Sea Shepherd. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
We're so glad to have you. So tell us, how did you get involved in Sea Shepherd? What drew you to the cause of the orcas?
Well, like many people, I had heard of Sea Shepherd, and then I became an avid fan of Whale Wars. And after watching about a season or two of Whale Wars, I thought, These people, they're the real deal. How do I get involved? So I went to the website and just started volunteering from there. I did a lot of work up in Seattle for a few years and whatever kind of land things I could get my hands on, because I'm not a navigator. A lot of sea shepherds are actually on the ground doing work, not on the oceans, but also on the ground as well. And became an onshore crew volunteer. And then from there, I decided that I would really like to start a chapter in Portland, Oregon. Felt like Portland would be very supportive of Sea Shepherd, and went ahead and about 6 months ago, we launched the first Sea Shepherd Conservation Society chapter of Portland, Oregon.
Great, and that's going well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's doing. We've had a lot of support. A lot of people are joining and getting involved, and we've already had a lot of different activities. We actually went whale watching this last weekend at Depot Bay, and then we did a nice beach cleanup, and we've done a lot of river cleanups, and we've done some activism work with ODFW for some marine birds and also some work with the sea lions. So we've been active.
You sure have. I know that for a fact, actually. So tell us, what are the biggest threats to orcas and other marine mammals right now?
Well, I would say the biggest threat to marine mammals in general would be, you know, climate change, ocean dead zones from animal agriculture, boat strikes, and actually the amount of noise pollution that they're dealing with at this point is enormous. You know, the shipping traffic. Whales used to talk across oceans. We have whales that were in the oceans 150 years ago that are still alive that now can't even hear themselves think. So noise pollution in the oceans is actually quite a big deal. And obviously the lack of fish is enormously difficult, especially, you know, clearly for our southern resident orcas.
Right.
Who are...
Well, you know, that's interesting you say about the noise pollution. I knew about sonar testing by the military, but I didn't realize there was other kinds of... What is that about? It's just the sound of the ships going through the water? Is that right?
Absolutely. It really makes it very difficult for them to connect with one another. And, you know, the more we learn about the whales, the more we realize that they actually communicate off... vast oceans to one another, and it's part of how they migrate and survive. And the fact that we have so much shipping traffic going on at this point, along with the sonar and recreational and you name it, it's really difficult on them. So that's one aspect of something that's going on that I think a lot of people don't realize. But clearly, climate change, you know, toxins in the water and lack of prey and food is is devastating to them.
Yeah, so the climate change is more because of the water heating up, or?
Well, the water heating up, you know, does things like it's killing our coral reefs. It's you know, impacting the amount of, you know, prey in terms of our salmon and, you know, any type of fish that is being, you know, impacted by climate change because our rivers are no longer cold enough for them to spawn. So climate change is impacting them in terms of how much it's impacting their prey and right down the line to the marine mammals that eat the prey that's having such a hard time surviving. Mm-hmm. So it's just that cyclical effect, you know.
Right. And they're kind of at the top of the food
chain.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the pollution, too, it came to mind when we were talking about all the video I've seen and photos on Facebook, for instance, about all the plastic in the ocean. So I'm wondering if that's...
Yes.
Because I think I saw, in fact, a dissection of a whale, and they were just full of plastic.
Absolutely. They are ingesting huge amounts of plastic, especially baleen whales, because, you know, they're fishing with their mouths basically open, taking in, you know, the plankton in the environment. So they're also taking in all the plastics that are in their environment, and it's devastating to them. Absolutely. And then the way the plastic breaks down into microplastics obviously is being ingested by their prey, and then they're ingesting that, and it just goes right down the line. And so the amount of, you know, toxins and PCBs and so on that they're ingesting is devastating. And especially as they like with our southern resident orcas, as they begin to...
Just hold on a second. Tell us, what are southern resident orcas, just for those who don't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, so we orcas have specific species, and we have a species of orca that live off the coast of Washington. They consist of three pods, J, K, and L. And they are like no other orcas in the entire world. Hmm. They have a certain language that they speak. Their body is shaped differently, and they have a culture that is solely their own culture. We're dealing with an animal that is definitely the most intelligent being on the earth, and so they have their own cultures, and they're very specific. So they live off the coast of Washington. They're the most studied group of orcas on the planet. Been studied by Canada, by Dr. Big, and then 42 years ago by Ken Balcom, Center for Whale Research, started identifying them. And so they're all clearly identified who they are. They actually have names. And how they are related. So they're monitored on a very regular basis, both by NOAA and Center for Whale Research. And they're having a really hard time right now making it.
I know. Okay. Well, we're going to go a little bit more into the... I know you're doing a campaign to help them,
mm-hmm.
and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Sure.
But right now, I just want to stick to the Sea Shepherd story
mm-hmm.
and tell us, what is the latest news about Sea Shepherd's efforts to shut down whaling? And I know it's Japan, and I believe there's Norway?
Mm-hmm.
Norway?
Iceland.
Okay. Iceland, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of our Japanese campaign in the Southern Ocean, right now it's on hold because the Japanese, after the tsunami, the fishermen were given quite amount of tsunami funding. And...
So, but from the government?
Yes.
And so like insurance?
Yes, and also just donations. As donations came in, obviously people that were most affected were coastal towns because of the tsunami. So a lot of the fishermen were very impacted by the tsunami. Therefore, they were the recipient of a lot of funds. And unfortunately, a lot of those funds have been allocated to work against Sea Shepherd to keep them from fishing, you know, or illegally fishing and poaching whales. So we don't have the ability to navigate and get close enough to them without them knowing that we are following them and trying to shut down their operation. So as we strategically move, they strategically move, and they have the upper hand with technology. So until we can find a way to outdo their technology, we're kind of holding off on that. It is not forgotten. It is just until we can find a way that we're actually making a positive impact when we're, you know, sending ships and funds there.
You need to get like a Tesla, somebody.
I know. And then in terms of Iceland, we're actually on the ground in Iceland right now. They're as we speak, are butchering whales, and we're there watching and filming and sending it out to the world. And we are also in the Faroe Islands right now, where they're continually driving pilot whales into the Grind beaches and slaughtering generations of pilot whales. So we're there as well.
As for whale meat, are you easing it to eat?
It is more of a traditional kill than it is for sustenance.
Hmm.
They have grocery stores. They have every luxury that you and I have. And most of the younger people do not participate in eating that meat. And when they do, it's more like a delicacy. It's more, you know, it's in some of the grocery stores as kind of like a touristy thing. But it's definitely not as a way, it is not to sustain their lives. which is very unfortunate. And we actually have removed some pilot whales from the bottom of the bay that they have actually sunk after the kills.
They sunk, but they're dead.
They're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And they sunk them because they're not using them.
Oh, so it's like extra waste.
Absolutely.
To them. Yeah. Yeah. What about the big whaling ships, though, from Japan? Are any of those, are they still out there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're still out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, going unchecked right now.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, we sure hope that changes.
Yes, we do.
So right now, we're just going to take a short station ID break, and we'll be right back. So stay tuned to KBOO Portland with our special guest, Michelle Seidelman of Portland Sea Shepherd. So welcome back to Voices for the Animals with Michelle Seidelman. She's working diligently with a group of other activists to save the world's largest sea mammals, the orcas. Now, right here on Puget Sound, there's a mother orca who's in trouble, though from what I understand, she's finally dropped her baby. But why don't you tell us that story, Michelle?
Yes. Yeah, so as our southern residents are starving, we have not had a successful birth in over 3 years. And a few weeks ago, J35, Taliqua gave birth to a baby girl, and she survived for about an hour, and then she passed. And for 17 days, I'm going to try and say this without getting teary. For 17 days, she carried her child on her back. And I believe that this was not only because she was suffering from a broken heart, but I also believe it was a wake-up call.
You think she was helping to send a message to people?
I absolutely do. Knowing the southern residents the way that I do, they're very telepathic. Their brains are structured in such a way that we can't even comprehend their ability to translate information and their connection to one another. And I believe that she was absolutely calling out for us to wake up, because there has been the science to end this suffering for them for many years, and we've allowed that to get to this critical point where we're looking at extinction. So she carried that baby for 17 days with the help of her son, Notch, and her family fed her fish to keep her alive. She took the baby out into ocean waters, brought the baby back. That over 1,000 miles she traveled with that baby on her back, and then finally released her.
You think she just maybe realized the baby was not going to live? Did you think she was trying to save her, or just wanted to keep making people aware?
I
it's hard to know, of course.
Yeah. I would say she absolutely knew that her baby had passed.
They're
so highly intelligent.
She's grieving, maybe.
It was grieving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a wake up call to humanity.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it did succeed in doing that, don't you?
I do. I do. There was international press over what was happening, and hopefully it will be the push that we need to go ahead and reach the lower floor of the Snake River Dams.
So talk about what that's about and how that will help them.
Yes. So in 2002, there was an environmental impact study done on how we could bring back the salmon runs to the Pacific Northwest. And there was an option in it, option four, which said that we breach the lower floor of the Snake River Dams, allowing there to be a cold, clean, pristine area for the salmon to return to spawn. And we've basically tried all the other options, spent hundreds of millions of dollars on it, and now we're at the lowest numbers ever with salmon. And the southern resident orcas, they only eat salmon. They eat about 85% salmon and maybe about 15% chum. Their main staple is, you know, Chinook salmon. And because they're no longer able to access any Chinook, they're slowly dying and they're starving to death. About 3 years ago, we lost 9 of them in about a 11-month period. And we're at the lowest number ever. We're at 75. That's the lowest it's been since they were actually taken and killed and put into captivity. Those are the families that were initially stolen from the ocean, and many family members were killed in trying to protect the baby. So we're at the lowest number since they were, you know, initially hit for captivity. And so by breaching the lower four of the Snake River dams, we can go ahead and allow the salmon a space to spawn and start returning the numbers back so they'll have adequate food supply. It's the number one thing that we can do to absolutely save them from going extinct.
And I know that, for instance, the other day I talked to Tony Frohoff, who's a scientist at In Defense of Animals, and she's been working on the cetacean issue for a long time, and she said they've been talking about those lower Snake River dams for years.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like they just keep doing everything else but take down those dams.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. What do you now you're doing a call-in campaign, so go ahead and talk about that.
You know, right now I have started an overpass action where once a week I have committed myself as well as some other activists that have been joining me to we've created a large banner asking people to get involved to save our southern resident orcas and to call the Governor Inslee and ask him to please breach the dams, and also to visit damsense.org because they've got great information on why it's so important to remove those dams. And so we are out there during commute and we are asking people to make those calls. So we're holding them over different overpasses, 5, 205, 84, and we're going to be out there this winter with lights on the signs if we haven't breached those dams by then.
Great. So, you know, we're going to include all of those numbers and ways that you can get in touch with this campaign on our KBOO website. And also Michelle has a Facebook page. You want to tell just people right now what's the Facebook page?
You can either find me on Facebook, Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, Seidelman, S-E-I-D-E-L-M-A-N. You could also go to Portland Sea Shepherd on Facebook, and you could also go to, Overpass Action S-R.
KW.
Yes, KW, sorry.
Save our SRKW Overpass Actions.
Uh-huh. Southern Resident Killer Whale.
Right, right. So that's a hard acronym.
It is. Yeah. Even I forget it at times.
Well, we're going to put it up there so people can check it out and just give a quick call to the governor. And just look, as I shared with you, Michelle, the governor's assistant said they've been getting flooded with calls. So that's a good thing. You're doing a good job getting the word out there. So it just needs to increase a little bit.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Yes, because we still, you know, we still have Scarlett out there, J50, and she's starving to death right now. She's a 3.5-year-old baby. I remember when she was born, just as pink as she could be, and she's out there right now starving to death. And behind her will be another and another. So as the media moves on from this story, we cannot. We need to be diligent in our phone calls and in our emails and showing up for the southern residents.
Yeah. Well, so there's a big commitment. So
yes, I'm there for the long haul. Yeah. I have a feeling.
Right. Yeah, I kind of get that feeling.
It's going to be a cold winter.
Yes. Now you mentioned all these things that are being done after the task force. All these task force meetings, everything but taking down the dam. So what are some of the other things you might want to bring up? The sea lions here at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, I've attended several of the task force meetings, and it seems that instead of us laying off fishing, instead of us being very serious about dam removal, the one thing that everyone seems to be getting behind is lethal control of our sea lions. They are being scapegoated and blamed for the lack of salmon, which is pretty horrific considering that they too are suffering right now. You know, we had tens of thousands of babies dying off the coast of California about 2-3 years ago. I know the numbers in Astoria are way down and they're underweight in Astoria. And, you know, they live in the ocean. I would think that they would be able to sustain their life with what's in the ocean before we remove what they're living off of and consume it ourselves. Mm-hmm. This is their food. It right. always has been their food. And also, they're critical to a healthy ocean. You know, basically, when they eat, they defecate, and that is what the plankton live off of. And it is imperative to a healthy ocean to have healthy marine mammals. Mm-hmm. And they are critical. And also, the teas, the transient orcas, they eat the marine mammals. They eat sea lions. And so if we start taking away their prey, we're going to be looking at the same situation mm-hmm. down the line for the transient orcas.
Well, it seems to me from what I see of wildlife services is they tend to just figure out they've got to kill an animal to save the other animal. They're doing the same thing with the the cormorants.
Absolutely.
You know, killing the cormorants. So, I mean, it just goes on, and it doesn't seem to ever have an end. Like, what I tell them is you kill this one, then you're going to have to kill another one. Anyway, we know that story.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that information. So now we're going to just move on a little bit to the situation with orcas and sea lions and all sea creatures that are used in captivity.
Yes.
And I just want to say that Scientific American published an op-ed a few years ago that said that orcas and elephants are uniquely unsuited to captivity. And I think we saw a little bit of that happening with, you know, blackfish. Mm-hmm. Is SeaWorld, is their profits have dropped considerably from what I understand, and they're no
yes.
longer allowed to breed
yes.
or import them. So that's a big change in terms of at least SeaWorld.
In the United States.
Just in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they are spreading to China right now.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So they're not safe only in our country.
Yes.
So that's another whole area of, you know, what you're involved in, I'm sure. And so you want to tell us a little bit about a couple of these stories. One of them is Toki Tai in the Miami Seaquarium, or otherwise known as Lolita.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us her story.
Yeah, so I prefer to call her Toki Tai.
It's her, the Lumination calls her that, right?
The Lumination calls her that, and that was her name given by, you know, the Center for Whale Research. And I prefer not to call her slave name, which is Lolita. However, a lot of people know her from Lolita. She's in Miami Seaquarium, and she was taken from the ocean and out of Penn Cove 48 years ago.
It's been 48.
48 years. So she was taken with her cousin, Hugo, and they were transported to Miami Seaquarium. And she lived there with Hugo, I believe, for about 17 years before he, I believe, made a conscious decision to end his suffering mm-hmm. and end his life. And he basically, you know, he hit the side of his tank until he died. And since that time, she's been alone. She's hasn't seen an orca now for over 30 years. She lives with two white-sided dolphins that are ill-fitted to be with her and are extremely aggressive and actually sexually assault her on a regular basis. And for over 25 years, there's been a group of people that have been desperately trying to get her back to the Salish Sea where she belongs. There's a cove that has been set aside for her off of Orcas Island that she would be moved to for retirement, and there would be 24-hour veterinary care on site while she readapted, and it would really be up to her whether she chose to rejoin her family, which swims right by that cove on a regular basis for about 4 or 5 months out of the year. So I have not a doubt in the world that they would come for her immediately. Mm-hmm. and they would reconnect. She calls in her native tongue at night. She doesn't do it during the day because she's punished. They turn their back to her and refuse to associate with her whatsoever if she speaks in her native tongue, but she does still do it. There's lots of recordings of her doing it at night. So that's she knows who she is. She remembers. Mm-hmm. And there's a place for her to go home and retire.
That's great.
And Orca Network's working very hard on that.
That's great. Thanks for that update. We don't have too much time left. I just want you to quickly say what you think the hope is and what people can do. I mean, I know you could spend a lot of time on that, but just give it up. Give it 30 seconds.
My hope is that we're going to breach the lower four Snake River dams this year using the 2002 EIS and get some salmon back to our southern resident orcas. And my hope is that we're going to set Tokatai free with help of the Lummi Nation and Orca Network and activists like me, and she's going to go home and be the missing piece for them.
Thank you, Michelle, for joining us today on Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. You can listen to this program on KBOO.fm and join us again next month for another edition of Voices for the Animals.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree. Come on, come on, come on, come on.